Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight I'll be speaking with Corey Larios, known best for his work with Pablo Cruz, though he has some solo works out there as well. We have Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Jennifer Kane, Executive Director for Arts Connections San Bernardino County, with their Creative People's Conference coming up October 5th on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College. Now, before we get to Lillian and the Creative People's Conference, she has this, a two-day music festival coming soon.
My guest is Roger Malinowski. He is a co-owner of the Huck Finn Jubilee that's coming to the community very soon. So Huck Finn Jubilee goes back a long time. It used to be up in the high desert at one point. Tell me what Huck Finn Jubilee is and what goes on there.
Absolutely. So Huck Finn Jubilee is in our 42nd year of operation. It was up in the high desert for a number of years, family owned. The city of Ontario took it over for a couple years and then hence shut it down. But we've taken it over. It's family owned again, which we're very proud to say. It's a bluegrass music festival and it has activities for kids. Kids are free, under 12. We've got great music, we've got great food, great drinks, beer, activities. It's just a really good family event. People come out and camp and spend the weekend with us and have a lot of fun.
Guests have the opportunity to come one day, 2 days, or camp. What are the types of things they'll experience when they're there? Not just the eating, but I know there's probably vendors. And then we'll talk about the music.
Absolutely, yeah. They can come one day, 2 days, the whole weekend. We load in camping on Thursday, so they can actually camp for 3 nights. RV and or tent camping is available. The types of activities you could expect, yeah, there is more than just food and beer. We've got craft vendors that bring everything from jewelry and apparel to art. We have actually some live art that takes place. We have some painters that come and do everything from watercolors and acrylics and drawing, anything that's happening live. We've got activities for the kids that's programmed throughout the days, including puppet shows and parades and face painting. And then, yeah, to speak to the music, it's a variety. We've got the traditional bluegrass, which is what this was founded on. It's really important to us in the festival. And then we've got a little bit of Americana, some folk, you know, some other music that's just really fun and family friendly and something for everyone, you know, no matter what the age.
So you said there's 2 days, and typically when you see these kinds of things, they're usually on a Saturday, Sunday. But yours is unique and it's on a Friday, Saturday, which I really like. So is Friday, is it all day? Is it half day, starts later?
Yeah, we're going to open up at 11 o'clock on Friday. We're thinking maybe people want to play hooky on Friday and come and join us. You know, we know Sundays are tough too. Like, people have church and other family activities. They're, you know, free to kind of hang out with us or they can head out to those events. They also have work on Monday. So we just wanted to have a really good time over the weekend. And that's kind of why we did it this way.
Well, I like the idea of playing hooky on Friday. So that sounds good. And what time does it go to in the evenings?
Goes to 11 o'clock. The doors are 11 to 11. Music from about noon to 11 both days.
Wow.
And then we have actually a really unique thing go on in our campgrounds. There is the pickers section of the RV camping spot. We party till pretty late, I guess early in the morning. We were up with some pickers last year until about 4 in the morning. Just groups of people who bring their instruments and get together and form various circles and play tunes together. And that's the beauty of this thing, is coming together as a community and playing music together, laughing together. And so that goes on far later into the night, but formal programming ends at 11.
And then on Saturday, you start at what time and go till 11 o'clock again?
Yeah, same thing, 11 o'clock, music starting at noon, going to 11 p.m. again, and more of the same in terms of the picking in the campgrounds.
And the kids' activities are available on both days, so whichever day the guests come, they're going to have about the same experience. The music might be just a little bit different.
Yeah, music will be different. We're doing a lot of the traditional bluegrass on Friday, and then we're stretching it a bit on Saturday with bands like Railroad Earth, California Honeydrops, Dust Bowl Revival. They have stretched the genre a little bit, but in ways that we certainly enjoy and hope our audience will enjoy. But yeah, you're right. The kids' activities go on each day, and so there's something a little bit different each day. So we invite people to come both days if they can make it. If not, I'm sure they'll have a great time either way.
And why do you say stretch the music? Does that mean it's not true bluegrass and you're going out on the perimeter of bluegrass, or why do you say stretch the music?
Yeah, that's a great question. I appreciate you asking that. So there is traditional bluegrass, which we know and love and would lack drum sets and make sure it has a banjo and totally acoustic and has a certain form and format. That is the traditional bluegrass. Bluegrass music as a genre has evolved, like many other forms of music, country and rock and roll and the sort. So we love what's happening in the genre as well. Like, we tip our hats to the roots music that is true traditional bluegrass, but we also love the evolution and what people are doing with it and kind of loosening up in terms of the instrumentation, adding drum kits every once in a while, or an electric bass, or, you know, the way that they treat the format of the music with soloing and kind of more of an open format. And so, yeah, it's stretching from the traditional bluegrass, but always kind of on the fringe and the perimeter. You know, it's a family event, so you're not going to have any issues with heavy metal or anything that's too far afield.
Got it. So why did you and your wife decide to take this on or buy and be owners of this event? What was it about it for you two?
Yeah, well, we attended in 2016, and we couldn't believe that there was this amazing festival, like right in our backyards. We live in West Covina, that had been going on for 40 years. 2016 was our first year of attendance, and we saw amazing musicianship, great bands. And moreover, we really found a community of people that, I don't know, we just couldn't let this thing die. The people were so welcoming and warm and nice and friendly. Our daughter was 2.5 years old at that time. She had a lot to do and had a lot of fun. It was a safe environment to go and hang out and enjoy music. And I think that's really it, is my wife and I have loved music festivals throughout our lives. I'm a former musician. She's a former dancer.
Okay.
We've always loved festivals, and this one was something magical, and we just found a way that we can still be at a festival but bring the kids and get the best of both worlds.
So did you give up your day job, or has this become your day and your night job?
No, still have the day jobs. Yeah, so we're hustling. We're working quite a bit. It's a nights and weekends kind of a thing. We've got a great team together. At some point, maybe in the future, we can step away from those things, but this is a passion project. This is something we do because we love it, and we want to see it continue.
Well, how wonderful. I've been speaking with Roger Malinowski. He is the co-owner of the Huck Finn Jubilee. It's coming to the Inland Empire on September 27th and 28th. That's a Friday and Saturday at Guasti Park. I hope it's a success and that our community flocks to enjoy the music.
Thank you so much for the exposure here.
And KVCR has tickets for the Huck Finn Jubilee. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. That was KVCR's Lillian Vasquez. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And all past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. You can also now tell your smart speaker to play KVCR. Later in the program, I'll be speaking with Corey Larios with Pablo Cruz, who started touring again this year. First, though, Lillian Vasquez once again with an arts organization, and they're approaching Creative People's Conference on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College, October 5th.
My guest is Jennifer Kane. She's the executive director of Arts Connection. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, Lillian. How's your day going?
So far, so good, and I'm excited to learn about Arts Connection. I know you guys have been around a long time, but explain what the mission is of Arts Connection for the San Bernardino County.
Wow, we've got a really inspiring mission, and we actually just re-envisioned the whole organization. We're now elevating arts and culture in San Bernardino County, and our local base is San Bernardino. So we're trying to elevate the arts to that level in which we start to think about arts and culture as something that's embedded and integrated into everything that we do, and talking about arts as a solutions partner in our communities and in our lives.
So give me some examples of the types of things or some of the projects that the Arts Connection has been involved with.
Yeah, well, we've been really lucky to work with some amazing partners around the whole county. For the last few years, we've been working with MilTree, which is an arts organization that works with active military and returning military back into everyday life. And they use art activities to help them through that processing, through that re-engagement. One of those projects was called Plant a Paper, where we worked actually with the local conservation organization to talk about native versus invasive species. And we went and collected all these invasive species off the land and then turned that into paper. And we did writing exercises and screen printing and paper making. So that's just an example of one of these collaborative arts projects that works not only like with the visual arts, but works with talking about how the arts can really be incorporated into the broader picture of civic life.
Now, just talking about your military project, how did that go and what was the involvement like?
The previous executive director, Danielle Wallace, she knows the power of the arts to kind of allow people to access parts of their own stories in a way that we can't necessarily do through traditional means. through like just a linear process of writing, how are you feeling today? You're not going to really get to that deeper level of how is that person processing some of these deeper emotional issues. So that's how that got started. And she reached out to some groups in the High Desert and Joshua Tree who she knew was doing some of that work. And she approached them to partner. And then the whole project was actually developed with the Mojave Desert Land Trust and with MilTree all along the way. It wasn't like we came in and we said, we have this one idea. We said, hey, we know that there's this issue. We know that arts could be a partner in moving this mission forward to bring these communities together. And let's brainstorm what that project would look like. And all of the artists involved in the project and the project partners were actively involved in writing that grant and producing that project.
It sounds like the name of your organization is very much what it is, Arts Connection.
Yep.
You're connecting with others and kind of creating partners around the community to do art and tell stories or help in therapy as the military, kind of a therapeutic opportunity. What other programs have you been a part of or has the Arts Connection been involved with?
Oh, well, we're really excited about this month of September. We're working up in the Morongo Basin, which if folks don't know about that, there, if you drive the 10 east and you hit the 62, go north, there's big swath of land on the 62 highway with amazing communities on either side, and we've been working up there for the last 3 years. We're doing a project called the Big Read. For the whole month of September, we have over 21 community organizations who are committed to trying to illuminate the themes of this one book using the arts. So the book is called Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. The book was chosen based off of the themes that would potentially most resonate with the community based off of the demographics, the environment. And it tells the story of hope in the face of basically apocalypse. Like there's this big, massive calamity, and there's nothing left except for hope, except for art, except for theater. So what we're doing is we have community readings throughout the month. There's Austin Blage workshops talking about how, you know, we can reuse found objects. There's a couple of art shows that are collecting artwork through an open call for artists to interpret the themes. There's a live reading performances. They're giving people opportunities in a multidisciplinary fashion to learn about what the themes of the book are, but using different forms of art.
Cool. You know, I used to think that art was pretty easy. They gave a theme and you did it. You guys take it to a whole nother level of really digging deep and getting very philosophical in how art should be. And I think that's cool. I'm glad you're doing it.
Thanks. It's something that I feel really passionate about because I want everybody to feel that there's a creative outlet and that every person is an artist. I know that that's a sort of cliche that we hear over and over again, but if we don't start to really see that and embody that truth, then we're going to just have these limited ideas about what art is, what it can be, and how it can serve moving us closer together in our humanity, but also moving our society forward.
I'm speaking with Jennifer Kane. She's the executive director of Arts Connection. How is Arts Connection funded? Are there grants that are written to do some of these projects?
Our operating funds come entirely from the California Arts Council. So we are the state and local partner to the California Arts Council. So they give us, it's a state and local partner grant. We have to reapply every year through a resolution of the County Board of Supervisors. They designate us as the local partners that allows us to apply for that money. It's very limited funding. So it pays for my part-time job.
And I'm guessing it's more than a part-time job. If you sound this passionate, it's probably more than 20 hours that you're putting in.
It is a passion project. When people ask me what I do and I say I'm the executive director of the County Arts Council, they go, oh, that's great. And I was like, well, it is great and it will be great because I know that it's going to become a full-time job eventually. But until we can really shift this mentality about how we're serving our communities, you know, in my role, I think that it's going to keep staying this underfunded part of our county as well as our city. And it's not just the work I do. This is across the board. We have trouble with funding in the arts in the entire Inland Empire.
Are there other projects?
Yes. One project that we're actually still working on that has been a two-year project and it's been really great and a great learning process is working with an artist group, David Allen Burns and Austin Young of Fallen Fruit. And that started with a project grant we got for outside of our operating funds to do this specific project to bring the group in, Fallen Fruit, who has this larger international art practice. This wasn't a new project, but it was an extension of their current work. One of them is called The Endless Orchard. It's based off of this idea that how can we imagine that everybody would have access to fresh fruit? And so they started getting interested in these ideas around what's the public right-of-way, and if we planted fruit trees in public spaces along the edges of properties, and then when those trees grew big, then they overhung onto sidewalks and whatnot, that's actually public domain. So it becomes literally a part of this endless access to free fruit based off of this understanding some of these laws around land use and planning. So that's the bigger idea. And they do a lot of participatory elements to their work. They call it Aren't You Glad I Didn't Say Banana? And they invite people to draw their own portrait on a piece of fruit, an orange specifically, in which they can start to see themselves in that personal connection with the fruit. So they do these to engage people in the process before they do the fruit tree adoptions, where they're actually teaching people where to plant the fruit tree and then how to map it on their website so that all of the trees that they get and plant end up getting mapped. So all of those are on the Endless Orchard map for San Bernardino. We have a site, the Garcia Center for the Arts, and up at Lake Arrowhead, the Rim of the World High School, and then we have two sites up in Crestline. Those were an extension of the project because we got some additional funding from the City of San Bernardino's Art and Historic Preservation Commission, as well as Southern California Gas. You know, just constantly looking for these funding partners to be able to increase this impact. And over 100 fruit trees were adopted, and these four permanent public sites were installed, one of which has this amazing sign along a river trail in downtown Victorville.
And so are those trees now available for the public to pick the oranges and enjoy them?
Well, it does take a little maturation time. They were able to give away a fair amount of fruit this first year, but
nice.
The trees are still quite young because they were just planted last fall. So give them, you know, at least another year and go back, giving them that time to grow. So it's a living artwork is what we like to say, that these kinds of ideas is we're really shifting, like, what is not just a painting. It's like now we've got this orchard. It's living, it's growing, and the community has to steward it. So it's something that they now own.
So it is giving back, although you said it's a small crop this year, but some people did enjoy oranges from this project, so that's very cool. I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. I want to talk about your annual conference, which is taking place this year on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College, the home of KVCR. It's on Saturday, October 5th. Tell me about it.
Oh, we couldn't be more excited to be in the heart of the city of San Bernardino, where we've spent most of our time. We love all the people there. And San Bernardino Valley College has been an amazing and really gracious host. They've opened up their art gallery for a show that we're hosting. That show, actually, it opens September 9th. We put out the call for artists and artwork and community responses, starting in actually late July. And we're still taking responses. And I say response because it doesn't have to be artwork. It can be an image that you took on your iPhone. It could be a series of words. It could be a picture of a piece of art that you made. The theme is, where do you find yourself in San Bernardino? How do you express yourself? Who's in your community? Where do you like to go have coffee? And we're trying to really get in this immersive experience of, like, where do people live? What's their life look and feel like? We're getting an amazing set of responses so far, everything from landscape to really detailed images of plant life and Big Bear to a quilt to really beautiful acrylic paintings. So I love getting the diversity of responses. We've also gotten some poetry. And we're also inviting, the week before the conference, a poet and a community organizer to lead workshops related to the themes in the gallery, and then the work created in the workshop will get added to those walls. So it's a growing, evolving show, kind of like the living artwork. It's evolving, but this one is like we're taking responses as it comes in. The show goes through October 5th, so we're having a closing reception, actually, the day of the conference. The conference is happening in the morning, 9 a.m. We start off with all the activities, and then after the day ends, we'll end at the gallery for a closing reception, kind of talk about the work in relationship to the content of the conference as well.
I'm Lillian Vasquez. You're listening to KVC Arts. I've been speaking with Jennifer Kane, Executive Director for Arts Connection San Bernardino County. Again, the upcoming Creative People's Conference is October 5th on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College. There's a lot going on with this conference, more than we could cover with our phone conversation, so much that I had Jennifer back to KVCR to give us some of what you might experience.
The afternoon is chock full of wonderful workshops, a variety of topics, so something for everybody. We've got something talking about artist-run spaces and creative entrepreneurship, some of the ins and outs, some of the challenges that you might encounter, as well as some of the practical skills. If you're interested in the arts in schools, some of the ins and outs of what to expect as a teacher or a parent, what you'd need to know, we've got some regional experts coming to talk about visual and performing arts in the schools. What about how art and media can drive social movements? Are you interested in organizing and how you can get your community more involved? Come learn from some local organizers about how they use art and media. What about your community and walking to school? There's artists who are hired to paint crosswalks. I don't know if you've ever heard about this. So we're actually going to have an artist who's worked on a community project in Rancho come talk about this project and a county initiative to get more painted crosswalks in our local communities. So come learn about how to do that. And also a piece from the IE Media Academy. So we're going to have some students from San Bernardino Valley College come talk about their comedy sketch program, and you'll get a chance to see their film that they just produced, Loco Valley, with a local Q&A, some of the students from San Bernardino Valley College.
All right, so let's back up just a little bit. Tell me about the crosswalk. Did he or she literally paint the crosswalks in cool different colors representing something? What was the idea behind that?
Yeah, so the artist came in and worked with the community talking about what they wanted to see there, what some of the colors. Then they did sort of a paint by numbers, and they actually painted the asphalt. And this is part of a Safe Routes to Schools program. So when you're driving along, it definitely makes people slow down to see bright colors, patterns, pictures on the ground. It's also a nice way to bring some art to the community in unexpected ways. So what I love about this conference is it's trying to show us the range of ways we can be creative and how it can enhance our lives in all ways, not just art on the walls, but art on the asphalt, art in businesses, art in the schools.
So let's talk about that quickly. The art in schools, you know, it seems to me that art has been taken out of the classroom for so many years, and it sounds like possibly people are really pushing to bring it back in, and maybe it's coming back. So what will this be about? What kind of engagement will it be about art in the classroom?
This workshop will address the state standards for visual and performing arts so that parents, teachers, they all know that this is a requirement.
So who makes a good candidate to go to that particular session?
Teachers in classrooms right now, aspiring teachers, as well as parents, because it's important to know what you should be expecting or what should be taught in a classroom so that you can then advocate for it. So visual and performing arts, there's new standards out. So all the teachers should know about the new standards. This workshop will talk a lot about the new standards that were just released. Parents should know about what that looks like. You know, what is their kid getting taught in the schools? Every student all day should have access to the arts. This is a requirement. So come learn about what that would look like. There's going to be a teacher there giving sort of a best practice example. So it's not just talking, you're going to see a really good example of how the arts are taught in the schools.
You know, I'm a firm believer that the arts can change lives through the arts, whether it's performance, singing, drawing, whatever it is, can really help some people and some students learn that may not be able to in other ways. But with the arts, they can suddenly shine and their work can shine and the self-esteem is really big.
I actually just talked to someone 2 days ago who said that his student participated in our Poetry Out Loud program last year. And after she performed in front of the group of 50 parents and students, she came back and she was so much more confident. She started joining clubs at school and she was more engaged in her classroom just because she performed this one poem in front of this group of strangers.
I rest my case. It sounds like it's a great place to be informed, catch some information about the arts right here in our community. Jennifer, thanks so much for your time. It was great to hear what the Arts Connection is doing to serve the San Bernardino County.
That was KBCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Jennifer Kane, Executive Director for Arts Connection San Bernardino County. Again, the Creative People's Conference is coming up October 5th on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College. More at artsconnectionnetwork.org. You're listening to KBC Arts on 91.9 KBCR. Online at kbcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Many past shows can be found through iTunes and Spotify and Google Play, and all past shows are kbcrnews.org/arts. Let's go now to Corey Larios. You may or may not know the name, but you just may know the music. If you're of a certain age, you definitely do. Pablo Cruz was a mainstay in the mid to late 70s, a bit into the 80s, then there was quite a hiatus. The group did get back together again around 20 years later, and as of 2019, started touring again. Starting with some of the past stuff, and I want to work up to what you're doing currently, but of course some Pablo Cruz stuff, people will know some of the tunes. They're just things that started coming at us in the mid-70s, What You Gonna Do and Love Will Find a Way, probably the biggest ones. What do you think, first of all, is the biggest audience reaction since Pablo Cruz is touring again? What do you think is the biggest thing that people just light up their eyes and they're excited to hear it again?
Well, you know, it's certainly the hit songs, you know. Since the band's been out on the road, you know, there's been a bit of a resurgence of our fan base, and the fans are like the deep-rooted fans that know all the album cuts, and they know, you know, where they bought the album, so they know, like, all the songs.
Right.
So a lot of songs in the show and the repertoire. And then, yeah, there's obviously the top five records, like What You Gonna Do, Love Will Find a Way, Place in the Sun, songs like that that, you know, cracked at least the top 20, you know, and then beyond. That really does light up the audience. I mean, everybody knows the words. Everybody sings along with us. And, you know, and they're great songs to play live. They're real uplifting and, you know, gets everybody up. So, you know, I mean, always the hits work,
sure.
You know, no matter where you are. Pablo Cruz does maybe 20 shows a year, maybe 25 shows a year, and we kind of concentrate in certain markets where we know we're going to be able to draw some people.
Gotcha. What would you identify as a tune or a few tunes that are really just the most oft overlooked? People love the big hits. We were talking about the ones that broke into the charts and were big, big tunes. But how about some that people always, you know, it was the best one on the B-side?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a few songs like that. And as I said, our show, we play about 90 minutes, you know, sometimes up 2 hours, sometimes beyond that. And we'll start pulling stuff out from album cuts, deeper cuts, or singles that were released that really didn't take off. One song is called Will You, Won't You, which is always a crowd pleaser. Then there's stuff like Atlanta June. Those songs always work live just because they've got great grooves and there's a lot of it. You know, everybody's somewhat of a virtuoso in the band, so there's a lot of playing, soloing and whatnot. And those songs were not big records, but they actually were intended to be. In fact, Atlanta June was the first single that we released off of our third album, Place in the Sun. And the B-side was What You Gonna Do. We were on A&M Records, and A&M thought that Atlanta June would have a good shot because of its title, you know, releasing it in Atlanta and starting it in Atlanta. And it didn't really take, and then the DJ flipped the song over. It was What You Gonna Do. That actually became a big hit.
This is one of those B-side surprise stories. I didn't know that about What You Gonna Do. I just knew that was a big tune as long as I've been cognizant of music. So
yeah, actually what happened with that, it was WDAS, which was barely R&B station up in, I think, Philadelphia. They spun the record. They're the ones that kind of flipped it over and started playing What You Gonna Do. It had that infectious kind of R&B groove. That's really what started the record, and it sort of spread over a period of time. It was really a great song for us, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. As you said, that's one that people know the words to or can get grooving along with. Whether or not they were ever into pop music, that's one that was with you anyway. Now, people do see Pablo Cruz performing these days, but it's not like the band has been going since 75. You guys really did take a 20-year hiatus, but it's not like anyone hung up their spurs. I know Dave Jenkins went country. Rock and Pop Masters, I'm curious about this, but writing to picture, you started scoring, and this was a new passion for you, yes?
The band just sort of stopped, you know, in about the mid-80s. We tried to, you know, Dave Jenkins and I were the primary songwriters and wrote, well, you know, pretty much the lion's share of everything for Pablo Cruz, and we did 7 records, and then the writing was not successful anymore, and, you know, we weren't able to get out of our own way, really. But, you know, so Dave went over to join this band, Southern Pacific, and worked with them, and I had always had a passion for writing the picture, and got pretty lucky. I mean, it was a good time for me to get into the industry. And I, you know, landed a movie first and some TV series stuff and then just sort of expanded from there. So, and yeah, I took a long time off from touring. I had gotten married too, so I kind of made the decision to either stay married or tour, you know. Because touring is very time-consuming, and I always felt like I liked being in the studio just writing more than being out on the road. So that's where that hiatus came from. And Dave stayed active playing live through all those years, and I just stayed in the studio writing.
Was Max Headroom, was that your first landed gig?
That was, I did this movie, I think I did a movie, and then I did, and then that was my first TV series when I was on ABC. And yeah, it was a real killer show to work on. I mean, for one thing, I mean, I was used to making, you know, one album every 2 years, which was like the total. And then all of a sudden, I moved over into episodic television. And fortunately, I was a quick study, but it was really, really, you know, a shocker, because that show was actually produced in Los Angeles, partially produced in San Francisco, but I did the music up in the Bay Area out of a studio in Sausalito, California. And, you know, this is before even fax machines. So all of the notes for that show came via modem.
Oh, my God.
I mean, all of our equipment was really archaic. I mean, when you look back to then and what we work with now, I mean, it's crazy. And it was, so everything took 10 times longer to do because it was electronic scoring.
Certainly. Wow.
Yeah. So that was the beginning. And then I landed a couple other series that actually ran for, you know, a year or a season. And then I ended up landing Baywatch, which was just a gift, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Show to work on.
Yeah, that for 11 seasons on that one or so.
That's right.
Is the theme yours?
Yeah, I wrote the theme actually with Jimmy Jameson, who sadly passed away last year, but Jimmy Jameson was the lead singer of the band Survivor.
Oh, my gosh. And, okay.
Yeah. So Jimmy sang it, and I produced music and, you know, played piano on the tracks and stuff. And, yeah, we had that theme. And then I had a partner, a guy named John DeAndrea, who joined me to score. And through that, we built a company around the show and started doing multiple shows each week, not just Baywatch, you know. So it was a great run. You know, it was a demanding show to begin with, Baywatch, in that it was actually on NBC, and NBC canceled it after one season. We did like 22 episodes or something, and then they canceled it. But the show blew up in Europe. It was huge in Britain and huge. It was like the number one TV show in Britain, number one TV show in Germany. So through that, they were able to fund it, and they went independent. And after 1 year, it was like they took the whole thing over and basically pioneered syndicated television. They just started their own studio, and they were beholden to no one, you know?
Wow. Another thing on Baywatch, this is maybe an odd trivial thing. I know that we got all that slow motion running because they were short on time and needed to stretch things out. So they slow-moed some of the stuff, and that gave them the full-length episode. And that's just a bit of trivia there. But what I wonder is, you scoring things, if this affected some of your future incidental composing, for example, that you would be thinking in slow motion, since that's how parts will be played out?
That's a good question. Well, you know, a lot of times, besides underscoring the show, there were a lot of songs, a lot of purchased, licensed songs. And so, you know, in many cases where they did slow-mo stuff, it was, you know, in montages where they really stretched those things out, and they, you know, the editor would cut to the song. Even if that's the case, I mean, we did, for the whole franchise, we did about 300 episodes.
Oh, my God.
You know, so I don't know. It's hard to remember exactly how we treated that stuff. But I understand the show is probably going to get picked up again and put on the air, the old episode. So I'll get to look at it and see.
Now, at least in Germany.
Yeah, yeah.
I've spoken to a couple of other composers, and I also suppose I just have to ask, with Baywatch and some of your other works, is there just really just a big stockpile of things labeled dramatic, serious, sappy, whatever, the incidental mood titles?
Basically, every week.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
We didn't library that show at all. I mean, there were other shows that we did where we contributed to the library, like Days of Our Lives, things like that, where those shows were library, and the editor would cut the show and use existing music, and it would be labeled just like you described, you know, and he would just go to his carts and pull down drama or comedic or, you know, whatever the scene called for. But Baywatch, we pretty much all the episodic stuff that we've done or that we did then and I do now, it's all from scratch.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm glad you brought up Days of Our Lives, because not only with Baywatch, but also with Days, didn't you get several Emmys out of at least these two runs?
Well, you know, we were part of a team of composers that, as I said, contributed to the library for Days of Our Lives. And yeah, they garnered like two or three. I think we had three Emmy nominations for music direction, participating in music direction. And then the show actually won for music direction. So, yeah. We did win an Emmy for that. It was kind of a gift in that when you contribute to a library, you know, you don't really know what the, unless you're watching the show, what cues that you did, what cues some other guys do. But there's a lot of guys that do these soap operas, and that's basically, they know you never write depictions. You know, you just contribute. And so, yeah, we did. There was, I think, three or four nominations.
There are a few other things on your credits regarding scoring, including some animation works. We have in there also Land Before Time, Kim Possible, I don't know this one. But your approach to scoring, it's got to be so vastly different between things like Max Headroom and Baywatch, you know, let's say real people, real situations, and then also cartoons, animation.
Right.
So sometimes I'm sure you get to view it first and you play along with it. I'd really like to hear your approach to scoring, and even if it's different for different types of things.
Well, my work is primarily electronic. You know, I pretty much orchestrate everything at a keyboard. And yes, always we get the picture, or I get the picture prior. I mean, the procedure is this. It's like once a picture is locked, considered locked, meaning that done all the editing, and that goes to the composer, and you spot the picture with the producer or the director. And spotting is meaning there's a continuous time code that starts at 1 hour, and you pick the number. So if at 1 minute and 30 seconds a cue starts and they say we want music from 1 minute 30 to 2 minute 10, then you know you've got like a 40-second cue that you need to write in there, and they'll describe it. Or in a perfect world, and I've been lucky to be able to have producers that trust me enough that we don't even have to go through that procedure. After you get a couple shows under your belt, you just, you know, you basically set the palette for the show. And meaning, when I say palette, I mean you're basically setting up your band, your orchestra. In Baywatch was orchestral to a degree, but we did use a lot of live guitars on that show, whereas Land Before Time was almost all orchestral, very whimsical, really very fun to write, but lots of woodwinds, lots of strings. It was really a fun show to write, but you write right to the picture. So, I mean, you know, in animation, you're hitting a lot of things that in many times an action-adventure show, you don't hit. You know, you're not hitting every move, but with the animation, which I'm sure you've seen, you know, a character turns his head and the music will comment on it.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Corey Larios of Pablo Cruz. Pablo Cruz just started touring again with much of the original lineup intact. More at PabloCruz.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Online at KVCRnews.org. I did notice on your credits, I'm just wanting to know some of the tunes that you co-wrote for. I see George Benson listed, Santana, the Neville Brothers. What are some of the tunes that you have co-written with them?
A lot of that stuff was different producers that I knew, and they wanted me to come in and sit in with the artists and write. Some of the stuff was written, you know, before, where the producer just knew the song existed. Obviously, you know, so-and-so wants to do this song. Santana was a really memorable session in that he was right at this point in his career where everything was going electronic and most of pop music on the radio wasn't even using real drums. It was all drum machines.
Yeah.
You know, this was the 80s, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was kind of classic. I remember this going into the session. He had, to this day, the best drum corps, the best drummers in the world. I mean, he has like four or five guys playing percussion and drums. And they were all sitting in the lounge while Carlos was standing over a drum machine. It was kind of comedic,
you know,
these guys were just hanging out, not needed for those sessions. A bunch of keyboard players, and everybody wrote songs with him, and they pulled certain songs for the studio. The Neville Brothers was the same situation where I produced some of the stuff with the producer, wrote for those guys. But I didn't pursue much of that. I could have pursued it, I guess, more, but it was mostly, you know, out of, you know, producers knowing me and saying, hey, why don't you come in and sit in on this session, or, you know, we have something to write. But once I got into the TV scene, it was like all-consuming, too.
Right. It seems not so much something that you're hired to do, per se, as just, hey, this was stuff that was happening. You're writing or laying out thicker textures or whatever.
In the case of the Neville Brothers or something, we actually sat in with the Nevilles and wrote, you know, in the room, sat down at the keyboard and threw ideas around, you know. Whereas so I think one of the songs that I was really proud of was written before, but Ben E. King recorded on his greatest hits. You know, to me, he was a legend, so it was awesome that he covered the song.
What was the tune?
It was called Test of Time.
Test of Time. All right.
Yeah.
If I could change anything, it'd be you. Oh, baby, yeah, it's true. All the insensitive things, all the ridiculous things you put me through. What am I to do? When I talk to you, you don't listen to me. You just play with your phone, you're in ecstasy. And I'm pretty sure you have ADD. And sometimes I wonder if you even remember me.
Do you remember?
If I could change anything, it'd be you.
We're speaking to Corey Larios of Pablo Cruz, but we're also speaking to Corey Charles, making his debut. This is fun, and we'll sort this out. So, Corey, your new release, it's the EP entitled If I Could Change Anything, It Would Be You. And before we go further, you can find this on iTunes and Amazon. You can go to YouTube and just type that out exactly. If I could change anything, it would be you. You'll catch the video for this. Tell us a little bit about the music video for this. We've got Erica Jordan. Let's say the mainstream work that people might know would be Sharknado 3, for example. How'd you end up with Erica for the video?
You know, the thing is there's a guy I've been working with that heard these songs and got, he said, you know, you should put these songs out. And I didn't know exactly what to do with them because they're all sort of off the wall lyrically. I mean, if I could change anything, it would be you. It sort of says it all in the title.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, one of the other songs on the record is called Here's Looking at Me, Dave, which is about the consummate egotist. The music, I mean, if I was going to liken it to any writer that I just love would be Randy Newman. It's kind of that kind of thing. So when I did If I Could Change Anything, It Would Be You, it's really about somebody who's just sort of a crazy woman, or it could be a crazy man, but I mean, I did it from a man singing about a woman. And online, I found this video of this girl called Diary of a Redhead. And she was like perfect, you know, she was all over the place. She was happy, she was sad, she was basically bipolar, like, you know, on steroids. And so this guy I'm working with, I showed it to him and he goes, oh man, she's great. We should try to find her and get her to just do a rant, you know, just see if she'd be available to do that. And turns out she lived in Los Angeles and he got in touch with her and, you know, just made a deal with her to just film herself going through a million moods. And so that's how it came about. But she just seemed to fit the bill perfect for that. So That's how that came about, which is, again, you know, the true beauty of the internet and, you know, looking on YouTube, you can find pretty much anything.
Absolutely.
You know, it would have been difficult to really find somebody to do that, but it had already been done. And our concern was to use this footage, if stuff's available and if you can use it. We were lucky enough to track her down. She had a real good attitude about it and kind of knocked it out. It was great.
If I could change anything, it would be you. And it's a funny song and also funny video, too. There are things, for example, somewhere in there said something about the wrong thing, and wrong is backwards. And so wrong itself is wrong. And so I love the double layered stuff. When I first encountered it, I thought it was cheese. And I was like, oh, my God, what am I looking? But really, just only a few seconds went by. And then there's all this wonderful, not even tongue-in-cheek, just blatant, I think you may have ADD. Or do you even remember me? Some of the other things in there. Takes just money.
Yeah, one of the lines in there is, when I talk to you, you don't listen to me. You just play with your phone. You're in ecstasy.
Ecstasy, that may have been the one that made me spit out my coffee and start the video from scratch and watch it with a different subjectivities.
Yeah, it definitely. It's schmaltzy as can be. I mean, musically, it's just complete schmaltz.
Did you say I'm an egotist? Baby, I'm a full-blooded narcissist. Lest I should be misconstrued, let there be no doubt as to who's the dude. What part of I love me have you missed? Ain't it great how we both agree? We got lots in common, we both love me. Morning, noon, and night, if I had my choice, all I hear is the cool sound of my own voice. Self-addiction's its own reward.
The whole EP is just lyrically on the edge that way. I mean, in the titles, you know. And here's looking at me, the opening line is, did you say I'm an egotist? Well, baby, I'm a full-blooded narcissist. Lest I should be misconstrued, let there be no doubt as to who's the dude. What part of I love me have you missed? And that was inspired just because we're all like pretty self-consumed, and I think these days, you know, with YouTube and Instagram and Snapchat, I mean, people are just basically producing themselves all day long, you know. It's all about them. So the chorus is, here's looking at me, babe, here's looking at me, here's looking at me, babe, me is all I see. It's just a fun collection of songs. One of the songs is called To Be Someone, and it's just a poke at the internet. The lyric is, some say it's a sick obsession, I'm always online. It's like a full-time profession, but I'm not making a dime. You know, but the chorus is, it sure feels good to be someone.
Nice.
It's all pretty sarcastic, if you listen to the rest of the song. It's very sarcastic. But, you know, our show, I mean, after all these years with Pablo Cruz, too, you know, when you're with the same guys after all these years, the fun part of doing the show is joke around on stage about the past and, you know, how we're getting older. And I even have a song in that show that I wrote about my kids called I Get Tired Just Thinking of You. So that's where all this sort of started. I'm glad I put it out. I'm glad I did it. And it kind of sets up the platform to do more stuff and, you know, to write, play some more things along that line. But it's completely the opposite of what Pablo Cruz did, for sure.
Oh, completely. Oh, my gosh. Pablo Cruz. I mean, we're looking at stadiums or just parks filled with people going with the music. And this is stuff that you want to sit close and get all the words to. And very, again, sarcastic, tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, it's true. It's very much like a jazz club or a little club or, you know, that's kind of... I'm probably going to do a few shows like that, like a trio or something.
Can't get enough of myself. Can't get enough of myself. Can't get enough of myself. Can't get enough.
this is only an EP. I mean, you said, what, only four songs on it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like you're really going to be doing the big tour to support the album, but you are going to have some shows out there, a full two-city
right.
tour maybe.
Right. You know, you should be able to listen to them on CoreyCharles.com.
Okay.
The whole thing's there.
All righty. Well, let's go ahead and address that too then. For people who want to find out more, there's always, of course, PabloCruz.com. There's a bio on you and the other guys, but you also mentioned your website again, please.
CoreyCharles.com, CoreyCharles.com. But, you know, the interesting thing is that when you do go on the site, it's actually gotten quite a bit of attention, you know, just because it's so off the wall. I'm surprised it would get any attention in this marketplace, but it's gotten some nice reviews and getting played on a lot of different video channels because it's a lyric video, basically, too, along with Erica being in there.
Absolutely. It's something to watch several times through because there's so many things going on with the words on the screen and the lyrics that are going on. Who put the video together for you? Who is the driving force behind this?
I actually produced it. You know,
oh, hello.
My oldest son is a very successful video producer, actually, doing pop videos like Justin Bieber and Demi Lovato. And,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he's actually in Tokyo today doing a DJ called Skrillex. I don't know if you're familiar with Skrillex, but amazing music. So he was like the judge and jury when I brought stuff out. I just have a real passion for music and new music and old music and just the entertainment industry in general. And there really is some of the stuff that's going on musically today, it's amazing music. We had a great night last night. We had a concert right here where I live, and it was Keith Urban. I'm sure you know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
It was his show, but John Fogerty got up from Creedence because he lives out here, and he got up and did about five songs, and man, it was amazing. He's great. Those guys just killed it.
That does remind me, with Pablo Cruz touring, do you guys ever stop, in essence, with the Pablo Cruz stuff for a moment and pull out some of these, for lack of a better word, novelty songs to just crack the people up before going back into the Pablo Cruz? In other words, does some of the Corey Charles stuff...
That's a good question. I mean, not really, but I definitely use, like, sometimes when we're just fooling around in between songs, I might play an excerpt of If I Could Change Anything, It Would Be You. Because just the title itself gets people, you know, they think it's funny, and so we'll use it like that, but not really. I haven't done that yet. We talked about maybe doing that, you know.
Well, they're completely different animals. They would take people by surprise, and that could be good or bad, I suppose.
Yeah.
Corey, I appreciate your time on this. Whether it's Corey Larios or Corey Charles, we look forward to seeing you either way.
Yeah, nothing like confusing people.
Got that right.
Hey, well, listen, thank you. Nice chat with you.
That was Corey Larios with Pablo Cruz. More at PabloCruz.com. More also at CoreyLarios.com. C-O-R-Y Larios. L-E-R-I-O-S.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to Corey Larios, also to Jennifer Kane with Arts Connection, and to Roger Malinowski with the Huck Finn Jubilee. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Sharina Wad, and Natalie Calmer. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. Once again, many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play, and all past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which reminds me, the on-air portion of the KVCR Fall Membership Campaign starts September 25th, and with your help, we can wrap it up before we even start. As soon as we hit our $99,000 goal, we cease fundraising. Help us get as far as we can before we even get to the on-air portion of our fall membership campaign with a contribution in any amount right now at kvcrnews.org. And thanks again.